Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, the tracks of my fears indeed. Well, and tears too. No tears or fears now until 4 o'clock. Of course, then the weekend comes. It's Roy Noble of an afternoon with BBC Radio Wales, and my next guest has spent the last 3 years, let me tell you, investigating the work of The Lord of the Rings, well, author J.R.R. Tolkien. And she's found some unexpected links between the man, his work, and Wales and the Welsh language. And don't we love a Welsh link in anything at all? And here to share our findings is Dimitra Fimi of Cardiff. Dimitra, you're very welcome indeed. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you very much. Yes. Thanks for having me.
I looked at your name and I thought, now what part of Wales is that from?
it's very much a Greek name.
Very much a Greek. Where in Greece?
A little island close to Athens called Salamis.
Right. And you've been in Wales some years.
I've been here for 7 years now, yes.
And married to a Welshman.
Yes, I am.
See what happens when your concentration drops. And you've been doing a PhD.
Yes, I did. I finished my PhD 2 years ago and I've been reworking on the material which has just been published into a book. So yes. I did my PhD here at Cardiff.
On Tolkien?
On Tolkien, yes.
Yeah, in context of history, I suppose.
I was looking at the cultural history, really. It was all about an attempt to look at Tolkien within the cultural context he was writing in. For many critics, Tolkien is a one-off in the 20th century context of literature because his work doesn't quite fit with anything else. But if you start looking at how he started and how his writing developed, then you start seeing that he actually does fit very well with his generation and his period.
Yes. I've got his work at home. But, you know, you must have researched a huge amount of his published and unpublished work as well.
Yes, that is right, yes. I mean, there are the most well-known works that everybody would know, The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, The Silmarillion. But lately there's been a great advent of the publication of a lot of his material he was working throughout his life but never published himself. So that has been published now by his son with a lot of editorial comment in 12 volumes. So there's a lot of material there.
Yes.
I have to say, this is not no easy reading for the faint-hearted. You really have to be interested to get into that.
No.
But I also had a chance to look at his material that has never been has never appeared in public in manuscript collections.
Oh, right.
So I had to go to America and Oxford, and these are the two main places yes. where his manuscripts are.
Did something leap out at you? Did something surprise you tremendously about him?
Well, there were a lot of surprising things. First of all, I was very much surprised to see that in his early works, instead of those tall elves that we all know
yes.
about, there are little tiny winged fairies. In his work. So that fits very well with the late Victorian and Edwardian context and what was happening in Victorian painting, what was happening in poetry at the time.
And literature, yes.
In literature, absolutely, yeah. Yes. So, he started very much as a late Victorian or Edwardian writer, but later on he developed this into his own kind of version.
Yes. So where did this interest in Tolkien come from then?
Oh, I guess, well, being Greek, I guess one of the main things I was always interested in was mythology and folklore, and I'm obviously pretty well read in classical mythology, and then I started delving into the Celtic and Old Norse things. And I think what fascinated me in Tolkien was that a single man managed to more or less achieve the breadth and width of legends and stories that usually is produced by a culture or a people or generations of storytelling.
Yes.
Well, he started on his own and created a huge body of work that is interconnected, and it's in that kind of legendary mythological mode.
Yes. And this connection now of the Welsh language with the language of the elves.
Yes.
Yeah, and
yes.
it's there, isn't it?
It's absolutely there, yes, yeah. yes. It's the language we're talking about is Sindarin, which is the one that, if people are familiar with the recent films, this is the one that most times the elves speak in the film. Now, Welsh was something that Tolkien was fascinated with right from his childhood. He grew up in Birmingham. At some point, they were occupying a house close to a railway station. He used to see the coal trucks coming in from Wales with Welsh names on them. He was absolutely taken by that. And, later on in his life, he described that in a very lyrical way as, a language coming out of the West, ancient and yet alive. There was always this romantic link of a very old, very ancient language that still, is very much spoken.
Yeah, quite. And he spent some time in Wales, didn't he?
He didn't spend time in Wales. He did come here for a PhD viva at some point. He did have a lot of correspondence and contact with the university here because he was marking, he was an external marker.
Well, you didn't
times.
Work in the university.
He was in Oxford. He was based in Oxford.
Right.
He did come here once or twice, but not that often.
Right.
But probably the most important of his works that where he really talks with a great appreciation about the Welsh language is his 1955 O'Donnell lecture, English and Welsh, which he was the first speaker of a series of very, you know, prestigious lectures on the relationship between the two languages and the two cultures. And this is where he declares that Welsh is beautiful, that it's a beautiful language, that the sounds are aesthetically pleasing, the sounds of the language and how the sounds fit with the meanings. And he goes really very much into the phonetics of the language as well.
Right, yes. Do you speak Welsh at all?
I do a little bit. I'm still learning. I've done 2 years and I'm, you know, slowly going. I can cope with listening to the news if I have to.
Right, yes.
But I'm trying still, you know.
I was intrigued by, Tolkien himself, you know, having enmeshed himself in this kind of background and having been intrigued and, romanced, if you like, by the language and its history and so on, and going back to the Mabinogion and interweaving into those
stories. Yes. I mean, he was definitely familiar with the Mabinogion. He was definitely familiar with the Celtic mythology and the Norse mythology very much. You know, he knew a lot of medieval material very, very well, and actually he had quite a few different editions of the Mabinogion in his personal library. I mean, I've had a chance to look at one of his copies, and it's quite heavily annotated. You know, he had worked on that quite a lot.
Yeah, quite.
He knew the stories pretty well. Yes.
Was it right that his parish priest, you know, who visited the family, was a half Welsh father?
Yes, that's right. There were, you know, Welsh speakers around, but he never learned Welsh well enough to be able to converse. For him, it was, you know, he looked at Welsh more from the angle of the philologist.
Yes.
How the language developed, how the medieval Welsh looks, you know, how it developed into the modern Welsh. He was never been able to speak fluently. It was more of a teaching interest and philological interest.
Yeah, quite. I'm looking here as well that he tramped. Seemingly, so it's alleged anyway, he tramped through the Black Mountains near the Brecon Beacons.
Any evidence for that. I'll have to look through that. Yeah, it might be a bit of an urban legend.
Because, it could be. Yes. We're very good at that in Wales.
But what I was going to... like walking, definitely,
Yes, because what I was going to ask was, you see, there's the Black Mountains of Hay on Wye, you know, where the book town is, if you like, and then there's the Black Mountain, the one western edge of the Brecon Beacons, where I'm from.
Yes, that's right.
It would be tremendous. And also, the other link is, because it says, suggested that the place called Ystradwellte and Pont Neddfych, and Ystradwellte in particular, on the southern parts of Powys, with its waterfalls and limestone landscape and deep caves, is perhaps mooted as the model for Middle Earth.
Well, again, you know, there's so many places that are claiming, you know, to be the model of Middle Earth.
I was going to say was, sorry to cut across you, I was the head teacher of the primary school down the road. So I was thinking to myself, here I was, the headmaster of the school, which was in the middle of Middle Earth.
Yeah, well, that's a very, very nice thing to think about.
Allow me to hang on to that story.
Yes, I think that's fine. I mean, it's really interesting how, you know, when the films were done, how New Zealand has suddenly been, you know, identified as the perfect Middle Earth. But if you think about it, you know, his most common models would have been places in Britain rather than anywhere else.
And the limestone areas, or the Carboniferous limestone, north of the South Wales coalfield, and those treks that he saw coming into the Midlands as well with the coal, and all these kind of links here. Well, this is quite fascinating, basically. This, they're talking Lord of the Rings and so on, and the Welsh connection, of which, you know, there's no denying.
No, there's no denying. I mean, if you look at Sindarin, the phonetic structure of that Elvish language is very much based on the sounds you find in Welsh. There's even the mutations, you know, mutations you see in the Welsh language. You see them in work there, grammatically, more or less in the same position as you see them in Welsh.
Yes.
I need to make this clear. He didn't borrow words. So if you look at the Sindarin language, you're not going to recognise words or vocabulary. What you'll recognise is the sound system. I mean, I had once, I tried that with Welsh speakers. I was playing them part of the film, and they said it's as if I'm listening to somebody speaking Welsh, but on the next door room, and I can't quite hear what they say, but the sounds are right. It is somebody speaking Welsh. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, indeed, exactly right, exactly right. Well, it's lovely to talk to you, and to put that right, there we are. We like to tick the box which says we have a Welsh connection in this kind
of
story is tremendous. Before you go, though, there's a little extra, you know, that I must ask you, because it came up this week about other countries and how they do things, and we were talking about somebody who's expecting a child here, and the naming of children and so on. And somebody told me, well, in France, of course, there's no ifs or buts about it. In some countries, people have been barred from calling their children 7 or 8 football players' names and so on. But in France, there's an approved list. Make a choice out of that, and that's it. And right. then somebody got in touch and said, that's right. And in Switzerland, it's the same. And if you don't sort of pick from the chosen list within a fortnight, you get fined.
Goodness, there.
But in Greece, there's a kind of formal arrangement as well, isn't there?
There is, yes. I mean, 99.9% of the times, you're expected to give your children the names of your parents. So I'm named after my grandmother. Yes. My sister is named after my other grandmother. My third sister is named after my grandfather's name, in the female version of the name. You know, it just goes like that, hierarchically.
Oh, therefore you go back to your grandparents' generation.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And there's no question.
Yeah. No, and usually it has to be, you know, because most Greeks are Greek Orthodox in religion, it has to be the name of a saint, you know, so that you can have a name day as well to celebrate, which is something like a second birthday, really.
That's right. They do something similar in Switzerland, wherever where there is a saint's name for every day. So there's no question about this. There's no excuse. Well, Dimitra, lovely to see you. Well, doctor, female, I must say.
Thank you so much.
And married a Welshman. What a quality woman you are.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, a pleasure. We'll speak again, I'm sure.
Thanks.